Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milk Packing District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Four people are injured when a van crashes into an ambulance. Tax activist Tom Sizemore pleads guilty to tax evasion, and two men are found dead in the septic tank at the Devil's Tower KOA.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, bong, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, August 5th, 2011. Four people were injured Thursday afternoon when a van crashed broadside into an ambulance on Southwest Shoals Ferry Road. The van driver, both Newburgh ambulance medics and their patient, were taken to the hospital. Investigators said a 51-year-old Beaverton woman was driving at a very fast speed south on Shoals Ferry Road and crossed the center line. This according to Sergeant David Thompson with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. The ambulance tried to avoid the van's path, but was struck broadside. Witness Dominic Monterossi said, "I heard an extremely bad bang, and I saw rolling and debris, shattered stuff all over the place, and it was really frightening. The sound was more frightening than the image itself." The impact of the crash was so severe, the van's engine was ejected from the vehicle. Firefighters spent 30 minutes extricating the van driver after the crash. She was taken by Life Flight to OHSU, where she was listed in critical condition. The paramedics were treated and released from the hospital. The patient, 90-year-old Mary Schallenberg, was being transported for a broken hip, and she did not suffer significant injuries from the crash.
There's not enough extricating that happens in stories these days. I mean, no. That's just in my opinion.
Also, not enough engines flying clean out of vehicles after they've been smacked by something.
No. Also, how did he describe her velocity? Did he say a lot of speed?
He said he heard an extremely bad bang, and I saw rolling and debris, shattered stuff all over the place.
Did he describe how fast she was going earlier
It just says she was driving very fast, at a very fast speed. And then she crossed the center line.
At an ass-hauling speed,
might say. And then the ambulance, which I'm assuming was also probably driving at a very fast speed. Although it was transporting a woman with a broken hip, it might not have had the lights on. I don't know.
That's a good question, actually. Did you ever do this? Did you ever get weirded out when you see an ambulance go down the street and then it just turns the lights off?
Yeah,
and you think, sorry. Okay. Well, better luck next time.
Oops.
I think about this every time I'm in a city like, Las Vegas is bad, although Manhattan is probably the worst that I've ever seen, where you just see some poor schmuck in an ambulance, you know, like in 42nd Street, and you go like, pal, you're never getting there. I don't know where. I don't care if the hospital's 15 feet away. You're never going to make it in time. It's not going to work out for you.
Have you ever been transported anywhere in an ambulance?
Not as the actual injured party. I was in the back of an ambulance as a company guest.
A ride-along?
Opening act. Whatever. You know, I was like, there was a guy and then I was there.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's not so interesting if you're in pain, but it's interesting.
I wasn't.
I dislocated my knee once and was taken to the hospital in an ambulance because my knee would not go back into place. And it was like, when you're in pain, you feel every single bump and turn that that ambulance takes. And then there's a guy there who just keeps going, we'll be there soon. We'll be there soon.
You're looking real good, Steve.
We'll be there soon.
No, you're going to be great. And then you realize that everything they're telling you might be true, but it's also the crap that they're supposed to tell you if it's totally not true.
Yeah.
Stephen King talks a lot about that, but where the guy was like, no, you're fine, man. Everything's good. No. You just barely got a scratch on you. And meanwhile, as he described it later, his lap had actually been turned 90 degrees to the left.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just can't believe, you know, and then, you know, what's that? I don't know. What's that dull, wet, sucking sound? Nothing, Steve. It's going to be fine. Don't you worry about it.
That's normal. That happens to everybody.
It's just.
We get that all the time. It's an equipment thing.
It's a new kind of tongue depressor we're trying, actually. It's the darndest thing. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is, I can't do the. I'm trying to do the knuckle cracking thing now.
Are you doing that every single day now because you know it squeams me out?
Yes, but karmically now God has punished me by taking away my ability to do that. Maybe the arthritis has finally set in.
So you're just looking for things to just like make me feel squeamish. You're gonna start talking about belly buttons. You're gonna like start putting in like, you know, your contact lenses and touching your eyeball in front of me.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Nobody wants to watch somebody else touch their eyeballs.
Have you seen that squid video?
No, I have not yet watched the Day of Squid video.
I'll send it your way. It is Legion of News here. It's Friday, August 5th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news coming your way. And if you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. It's also available as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionofNews.com. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, Mr. Big Jim Willigan in the studio for another installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101. Today, talking about America's foul-mouthed sweetheart, Betty White. That is next hour.
I love foul-mouthed Betty White.
It's really going to be great. That's next hour, along with Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and Tales of Humor and Amusement. Here's Don Taylor.
Tax activist Bill Sizemore pleaded guilty.
Is that what he is now?
Yes, he's a tax activist.
Oh, I'm thinking of Tom Sizemore.
No, Bill Sizemore.
He's a punch activist.
Yeah, Bill Sizemore.
He's a smacktivist.
Bill Sizemore is a big D-bag in a completely different way than Tom Sizemore.
Okay.
Tax activist Bill Sizemore pleaded guilty to 3 felony counts of Oregon personal income tax evasion, according to Attorney General John Kroger. Sizemore was indicted by a grand jury in October of 2009 for failing to file state income tax returns for 2006, 2007, and 2008. Everybody has to pay their taxes, said Attorney General Kroger. There are no exceptions. So Sizemore received a presumptive sentence under Oregon sentencing guidelines for 36 months of supervised probation. As part of his probation, Sizemore must immediately serve 30 days in Marion County Jail and will not be eligible for early release. Under the plea agreement, Sizemore will also serve 100 hours of community service following his release from jail and repay the state for his court-appointed attorney's fees. He must also file tax returns for 2006 to 2008 within 120 days, file future tax returns on time, and complete his 3-year probationary term without any violations.
Do I not get credit for calling Tom Sizemore a smacktivist?
A smacktivist. I like that.
Right.
He's,
That's okay. Don't worry about it.
Tom Sizemore makes me sad. Bill Sizemore, not so much. Tom Sizemore, a little bit.
Is there a porn actor named Dick Sizemore?
There should be.
There totally should be. That's going to be my porn name. Because apparently Adam Carolla already took Duke Lacrosse.
Now, before you take that as your porn name, be sure that there should be some truth in advertising.
How do you mean?
You know what I mean. I mean, if you start calling yourself Dick Sizemore and you make dirty movies and then people go, huh?
Well, it's all relative. I mean, more than what?
I mean, I suppose you could do like a whole Lord of the Rings, like a camera trick.
A forced perspective thing. Okay, baby, I need you to stand back there on the hill. No, keep going. Keep going. I'm going to be right here by the camera. Keep going. I can still see you. Keep going. There you go. Oh, yeah. And then it's just, you know.
Right. He's enormous.
Then it'll be like the photograph of the farmer with like the 9-foot grasshopper that he caught. Yeah.
Exactly like that.
Excellent.
The U.S. Labor Department has fined three Washington State berry farms a total of $73,000 for employing children as young as 6 years old as pickers. The department's Portland, Oregon office said Thursday the violations include failing to maintain proof of age records and failure to pay minimum wage.
A lot of picking, not much gritting.
A total of nine underage workers were found during a child labor investigation in June at farms in Woodland, Washington, and Ridgefield, Washington. The department says all three employers removed the underage workers and agreed to attend wage and hour training for the next 3 years.
So they can learn to read a sign in the kitchen that says, the minimum wage is $9.
Yeah, and also, you know, you have to be like 14 or something to work in a field or something like that.
Well, you know, if they get much older than six, they don't have to pick their locks.
And plus, little kids like that, they don't have to bend over as far. If you're picking berries and stuff, I mean, it's closer. It's right there. It's sort of like having a dachshund, like, clean under your coffee table.
It's exactly like that.
They're small. They're able to, like, they're actually closer to the thing. You'd think it would be a more efficient system.
By that rationale, we should just be hiring the Vietnam guys with no legs.
And midgets.
Little people. Yes.
Little people.
Of all varieties and shapes.
Anything low down to the ground.
Limbo artists.
You want small people for that.
You get your limbo artist in there, and he's able to, and then it's a tropic. Then he can provide island amusement for you
out
as well.
Out of work circus performers who are perhaps double jointed.
That's right. Sort of a get all the circuit guys that you know that get the temp gig when it comes through town, and then you know are left at loose ends.
Plus, how do you know that 6 year old children don't find berry picking fun?
And whitewashing of fences, they love that too.
That.
They can't get enough of it. Who was it that did this?
And working in sewing machine factories
and making my iPhone.
Right.
Where was it that this happened?
This was in Washington State.
But I mean, was it a company?
No, it didn't say specifically. It's two farms in Washington that grow strawberries.
Were these what did we call them yesterday? Seasonal employees.
I believe they may
seasonal employees.
The children of the seasonal employees.
Frequently.
Which is a very not scary horror movie, by the way.
No, of course not.
Children of the seasonal farm workers. Ooh, they're picking our berries, and their eyes are glowing.
Spalding Gray in. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Well, now you can tell that you know your kids, when your kids are trying to eat breakfast, you can go, baby, they were picked by little kids just like you.
Yeah.
So you know they're good.
And also, you better appreciate what I give you, or I'm going to make you go out and pick your berries.
Somebody is, can I just say this, by the way? Look, I'm not trying to make light of the plight of illegal immigrants, I am too.
Making light of everything is basically our job.
I'm trying to make less light. I'm trying to make dim of the plight of their children who were just sort of indentured servants for the whole thing. Except I got to say, anybody who's ever grown up within shouting distance of any kind of farming or agricultural community had the same situation. They're called parents. Who just, you know, kick you out into, you know, because it's like Brussels sprout harvesting season or something. Or it's, you know, or if you grow up in Oregon, they just give you that big ass like wicker hop basket and just send you out into the field and say, come back at dusk.
Also, I think we come from a generation, too, where...
Do we, Don?
Do we? I believe you and I, back before children were all considered special little snowflakes that had to be driven in an SUV.
Is this when they respected their elders?
No, it's more like we were just all treated as indentured servants. The whole point, our parents looked at us and said, oh, you will work for me. I mean, it's not like my dad paid me to wash his car, and yet I was forced to do that. You know, or clean the bathrooms, or any of the number of things that my parents made me do. I mean, isn't that kind of what parents do?
I'm just wondering if this is like a role-playing thing, and I'm supposed to take on the, daddy role, where I then say, well, I'm paying you in room and board. That's what I'm paying you in.
Well, that might be interesting for completely different reasons.
I'm going to be paying you in a yardstick if you don't watch your lip.
Okay, now you're just, you know.
All right. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Now I'm just getting home.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You are part of the greatest generation, though, as several people have noted. So, you know. It's the least you could do after taking lead at Anzio, Don, is to try to be a little bit gracious about things.
I look Charlie in the eye, man.
You're listening to Legion of News here at. By the way, that I got to tell you, that's why my wife has a she's got a bit of a green thumb and has a whole garden going, and is walked into the kitchen the other day and she's not even really a hippie thing. It's just like a people who have gardens thing. She's got like 17 different kinds of basil that she's been growing, and then she's quizzing me on it as though I can possibly tell them apart. She says, "Do you know what kind of basil this is?" And it's like after the fourth. Yes, I do.
How long has she been married to you? And she thinks you will know the difference between kinds of basil?
Not long enough. But it's like after I've gotten the fourth kind of basil wrong in a row, it's like, why would you not just quit then and just and put tags on them or something? But she's doing that thing, and then she's got, like, big, like, I don't know, bushels of dill or something that she's drying out or whatever, which is fun. But you know why she does that? Because she never did that growing up. Because, as Mark Twain says, play is what a body is not obliged to do. And so I was obliged to help my parents with their vast, seemingly endless, gardening and outdoor and planting and sowing and reaping and composting chores. And it's not like it was slave labor or something, but it's also not something I enjoyed a whole lot. Especially, can I just tell you this? Final thing, and then we're going to move on. Otherwise, I'm just going to start monologuing on on compost. But I got to tell you, like the single worst job outside on when it comes to yard duty or garden duty, and I think I speak for a lot of people who had to do this, really is when you're the one who's sent out there with a pitchfork to turn the compost.
Yeah.
Turning the compost, which you got to do like once a week or something, especially if you're like my dad, who somehow just disregarded that whole thing about, and you're not supposed to put dog droppings in there. My dad was like, well, what's more organic than poo? And so it's like, there I am just with this huge steaming pile of compost that I got to turn. I know it's the lunch hour, but I mean, just turning it, you know, and it's like, and other people had, what do you call it, like rototilling things? No. I have a picture of me somewhere. It's one of those big-ass, like, Grapes of Wrath things where it's like a huge metal wheel and then two, like, metal bars coming back and then handles and then a huge sort of plow thing that is angled down like the bowl of a shovel. And that's what I'm like rototilling me. And I and look, I'm spindly, you know, now. I was spindly and tiny then. And I mean, it's amazing I didn't just get a heat stroke every single summer. Anyway.
Or just turn into some kind of, you know, buff muscular fellow
well,
from
that's
all of
the
that
other
work.
Thing. Well, yeah, or at least learn how to tan at some point. So none of that. Mm. Oh.
A Hillsborough man who attempted to swim across a reservoir has disappeared and is presumed to have drowned.
I'm sorry.
The Douglas County Sheriff's Office said Michael Parker, 43, was attempting to swim across the Ben Irving Reservoir in 10 Mile, Oregon, about 15 miles southwest of Roseburg, on Wednesday. He was about one-third of the way across the reservoir when he began to struggle and sank. Dive teams searched for 2 hours in the murky water without finding Parker. And suspended the search on Friday.
The best part is that reservoir actually is from the French, and I'm not making this up. Reservoir is from the French to keep.
Oh.
So,
well, and it is indeed
living up to its name.
Keeping Mr. Parker. A federal jury returns convictions against five current or former police officers for a shooting incident on a bridge near New Orleans just after Hurricane Katrina. All officers were found guilty of deprivation of rights and civil rights violations. U.S. Attorney Jim Letton says this was a difficult day.
This is a tough day because this is, I think, we bring to at least this part of the case to a conclusion in terms of these defendants and these charges.
Now, do we know exactly what the shooting, who it was of, and if they were, do we know if they were asking for it?
I don't remember the details. I don't want to say because I think I have an idea of what it is, but if I say, I will say it all along. I think it was a situation where they had closed down the bridge because, remember, they weren't letting anyone leave
right
at one point.
Stay in steerage.
And I believe there were some people who attempted to do so anyway, saying, what the hell? You can't keep us here. And they said, yes, we can. Blam, blam, blam.
This is, as someone has noted, was this one of those cases where they said, and there's all these black people heading right for us over the bridge?
I think that was it, yes.
What do we have on us that can stop them? Oh, wait. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I do remember during that whole hurricane and just watching it unfold on TV, but also online. And it really just, it did seem like it was going to become this, like, weird The Stand meets Walking Dead moment where the entire place was just going to implode. Like, it was just going to become this no man's land, and it was just going to take the entire country down with it.
And it was indeed like that for a while. I mean, particularly for people who were, like, trapped on this bridge, because there were people who tried to leave town via this bridge and were forcibly and violently discouraged from doing so, and were told that relief workers would be coming to bring them, like, food and water and stuff. And they sat there for, like, a week. And nobody ever came, and they were just trapped on this bridge and not allowed to leave.
And it's all I Am Legend and whatnot, where if you tried to get off, there were just the guys like blocking it on the on either end of the thing.
Letton says this should let some people know there are consequences for their actions.
Public officials, and especially law enforcement officers, will be held accountable for their acts, and that any abuse of power, especially that power that violates the rights and the civil liberties of our citizens, will have serious consequences.
Just can't be shooting everybody you want to shoot. The whole system breaks down. All right, so
I mean, what's the point of being a cop, though, if you can't shoot everybody you want to shoot?
I don't know. You know, here's the thing. Do cops really fire warning shots?
No.
I didn't think so, because you figure those bullets got to land somewhere.
Yeah, because they don't fire warning shots for the same reason they don't shoot to wound, because it's just a potential lawsuit waiting to happen. The idea is if you're going to discharge your weapon at somebody, your intent is to kill them.
And then, plus, that's just not as fun, shooting to wound. I mean, really.
Because that's the thing. Somebody explained that to me once. I was like, well, you know, cops, why kill the guy? He's waving a knife and stuff, and he's like several yards away from you. Shoot him in the knee. And the fact is they don't do that because then the guy will sue you.
Well, yeah, seriously. I mean, you know, and if he's dead, then, you know, I mean, unless he just has some... Unless he has some incredibly rapacious next of kin, it seems like your problems are at an end. That's a bit of a self cleaning oven there. Yeah. It just sort of works itself out. I could say that. So this is what 2011. So it was just like maybe two years ago, maybe three, but no more than three. Lara was there for a nursing convention, and I mean, in Nolens. Because when did the hurricane happen?
2006?
No, it was longer ago than that.
I don't remember.
Because it was longer ago than that because it was, I think it was before, well, now I don't even remember. Now I'm just, now I have no recollection of when it happened. Because here's the thing, because I'm basing it all, I'm trying to figure
2005.
Out.
2005.
Okay, because I'm trying to figure out exactly where was I when I saw Kanye West do the George Bush doesn't care about black people thing. Because I was in San Diego when he did that. So 2005, so she was there, like, I guess 3 years ago. So that would have been 3 years after the fact. And she said that it wasn't all the time, but occasionally she would go down a street or whatever, and she would still see one of those houses that said, like, two dead inside or something. Where, like, you know, presumably they were no longer there, but also, like, nobody would come by to give it a good scrub. You know, and that indicates that, I mean, where everything sort of sits on the priority the priority level, you know, in certain parts of our great nation.
A tragic accident claimed the lives of two men Wednesday while at Devil's Tower KOA Campground, about 10 miles outside of Hewlett, Wyoming. You may be familiar with Devil's Tower as the giant monolithic mesa from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Matthew S. Driscoll, 49, of Devil's Tower, and Charles F. Haynes of Belle Fourche, he was 60, were killed while performing routine septic work at the campground located at the entrance of Devil's Tower National Monument. Driscoll was the owner of the campground in which the accident occurred, and Haynes was the owner of Tri-State Septic Service of Belle Fourche. According to the Crook County Sheriff's Office, officers received a call about 3:31 p.m. from an individual stating that a person had possibly fallen into a septic tank. Sheriff Steve Stala said, both deaths appear to be a tragic accident. The case is still under investigation, so at this point, that's all we know. Because of the nature of the accident, autopsies will be performed to determine the exact cause of death. Agencies responding were ambulance service, the fire department, and law enforcement from Devil's Tower National Monument.
If you burn me, I gotta go do some septic work on the Devil's Tower, if you know what I mean.
On my list of ways I would prefer to die, drowning in a septic tank is very, very low on the list.
Would you rather drown in a septic tank, or would you rather be killed by rats? Like 25 rats. I mean, they're big, but 25 of them.
I guess I might have to pick the septic tank because it would probably be quicker.
Okay.
As horrible as it would be.
Septic tank or... Wait. Okay, drowning in a septic tank. And the thing is, you don't just drown in the septic tank. Drowning in a septic tank, you're thrown into it. Like maybe thrown off, like walking the plank. Maybe
okay.
thrown off the plank into the septic tank. Or must behead yourself with a chainsaw.
Well, I'd probably choose beheading myself with a chainsaw because you know my chosen form of death
beheading
would be to be accidentally beheaded.
Well, this is not
so
accidental.
This is not accidental. But,
it's not a guillotine.
As long as it's a chainsaw, I mean, at least it would be quick.
Well, I mean, that's if you do it right.
And then I still have that experience of having that 3 seconds of consciousness where I could go, wow, my head came off.
I think you're overestimating the speed with which a chainsaw would behead you. I think you might be...
Because you have to, like, really take a good swing at yourself.
Well, and you have to have good upper body strength, too. Because at a certain point, probably you're going to be distracted and going to drop it.
It still would be faster, though, than drowning in a septic tank.
All right. Well, fair enough. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us as well. Here is Don Taylor.
The Hawthorne Bridge will be closed to traffic on Saturday from midnight to 8 p.m. So it's like the whole day, Sunday, for the Brunch on the Bridge event.
Oh, God, that's right. It can't be midnight to 8 p.m. There's no way. There's no way that they would close it.
No, yes, they would, because...
What does that mean?
It means that crews will use the time to set up and take down the event. The event itself will take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Wait, so midnight,
Saturday.
So the beginning of the day, stroke of midnight.
Yeah. Midnight Saturday, 12:01 Saturday.
All the way until...
8 p.m.
Well, that's just... Okay, fine. All right. This is when?
Honest to God.
All day Saturday?
They should not be allowed to do this.
Don't we already have a bridge that's closed, like, for the summer?
It's one thing to shut down, like, a block for a block party or to reserve a public park. Or something like that. But this is a bridge that people need to get across the damn river.
Well, especially now, because the Morrison Bridge is already closed. I mean, the Morrison Bridge is closed, like, indefinitely. Like, seemingly forever, given the progress and how long it took them to work on the Burnside Bridge when they were doing that. So what is this for? As if I didn't know. This is for kink listeners, obviously, but...
It's a fundraiser for B-Shares, a local bike delivery program that serves families in need. The public is...
Wait a minute. Hold on. Are you informing me that they are actually closing the bridge...
For a private event.
No, but not just that. They're closing the bridge for something that benefits bicycles.
Yes. And bicycles and pedestrians will still be able to cross the bridge.
Well, that's good. How nice for them.
But cars and other traffic not be allowed to. I guess Morrison is going to be open because it says you can use Portland's other bridges, such as Burnside, Ross Island, Markham, and Morrison.
Well, then what is that? Okay, correct me if I'm wrong here. Is there not a bridge that is just down the road from here that has been closed for the last several weeks?
Broadway? Is Broadway closed?
I could be wrong about that. That it might be open now. They might actually be done with it. But I know the last several times, because what happens is if I'm in Southeast and I need to go downtown, I will typically go down Morrison and I'll just go across that way, as opposed to having to hook it over to the Hawthorne Bridge. But there's been a thing that just says like bridge, like it, they detour you at 12th and Morrison right before you get to Grand Central, and they just say like no, like turn around, like there's no going this way.
TriMet service will be limited on the bridge. Buses will not be crossing the bridge between 8 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Bus routes 4, 6, 14, 15, and 33 will be detoured over the Morrison and Burnside bridges. The Hawthorne will also be unable to lift for river traffic between 6:30 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Incidentally, Thomas Gill confirms that Morrison is closed for the summer.
Okay, so they're wrong here. You can't. I think somebody just pasted in, these are the other bridges. We have. Yes, and so the reason that we are all going to be inconvenienced in this way is so that they can cover the middle of the center lane with lawn, where guests can enjoy free brunch items, bring their own picnic, or nosh on treats from food carts, and they're encouraged to bring donations of non-perishable food.
Now, when you say that guests can enjoy free food items, the last time they had a breakfast on the bridge thing, the food items were free, but there was a $40 cover charge to get in.
Yeah, it says that it requires a ticket to enter the event, but it doesn't say how much it costs. So.
What are they? And somebody asked a really valid point here. Don't we already have those? What are they called? Parks that have grass that's already there?
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't need to, like, actually drive on those to get places.
Seriously.
To continue the business of being a city.
And it's not like I'm, and I think everybody knows, it's not like I'm anti-bicycle or anti-bicyclist in theory or anti-pedestrian, but it's like there are, I mean, literally, this is like 1/10,000th of the square footage in Portland. I mean, 99.999% of the city is not made of bridge. Pick part of that area. Pick, I don't know, maybe a place that cars don't need to drive. Down by any one of the parks. Maybe down by the river. Maybe in the park block. Maybe just a place where all the traffic doesn't converge in one very, very narrow space trying to get across the river in an already congested because the other goddamn bridge is already closed fashion. All right. That's great. That's wonderful.
Portland's motto is the city that works.
What do they do if here's a question. What do they do if a boat has to come by?
They tell it no, apparently. That's what it says. They aren't going to be able to lift the bridge between like 8 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. or something.
It'd be a real shame if a boat were to come through and insisted that the bridge be lifted. Or if a boat came by and had something real tall on top of it and maybe was not reachable by anybody up in the control tower. And there was just no choice, and they just had to, clack that go-ga and get everybody off the bridge. It'd be really, really unfortunate. So what I'm just saying is no one should do that. In no way should anybody.
Yeah, that would disrupt things horribly.
What we don't want to do is to make people have to get up and grab their bubbly and run for cover as they take their sod with them, running off the Hawthorne Bridge. When? Sometime between...
All day Saturday.
When is the actual brunch happening? Because workers, of course, are just doing their job.
Yeah, the brunch itself is happening between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Okay, all right. This is sort of like a city that works at making my life more difficult.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. All right, so again, just to clarify here, things that you shouldn't do, in no way should you try to induce a boat, or in fact, if you are possessed of a watercraft yourself, in no way should you just put like a huge, massive, like flagpole mast thing on top of it that would necessitate the raising of the bridge. Don't do that. That would be wrong.
No.
All right.
Let's do our science.
Let's see. Where's the... here's your science on the march for Friday, August 5th, 2011. There, it's a Legion of News, part of Cascadia.fm. This is brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about... You know what I was just thinking about Squires Electric? I was down there just a bit earlier. I was borrowing some electrical tape, actually. And because I was doing a little... doing a little upgrading around here, and you know they actually have
would this be the tape that you use to put your names on your new headphones?
Yes, they say Rick Emerson now.
Yeah,
look,
yeah,
see,
it
says
so
my name.
Doing a little work around.
That's
here
right.
With the tape,
but down there, they actually have a whole series of framed vintage, public safety print ads, like from Life Magazine. Where it's like these great sort of 1950s sort of drawings of like a little blonde girl like looking at a power line with while she's walking her dog, and there's these weird sort of bizarre like Warholian clouds in the background, and it says, you know, call the electric company, and they're great. And I was actually thinking that Joe Squires himself, you know what he got to do? He got to find some way to leverage this whole business of the recent discovery of the Kite Man video. He ought to be. I should sell him this idea, where he had to do a little bit of an advertisement with that. Not that I'm trying to push him to other media,
but
the Kite Man, and then he somehow like steps into the frame, or do a little green screen thing where he is in fact the Kite Man.
Yes.
Or he's son of Kite Man, Kite Man the Second.
The return of Kite Man.
Everybody heard this idea. Everybody knows that this was copyright August 5th, 2011. Rick Emerson, right there. Anybody else does this, I will have them killed. And then. Stomped on. And then the remains burned, ground into a fine powder, and put in a pepper mill at a pretentious restaurant. Just FYI. Squires Electric. You can reach them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. Click the like button if you would there. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, whether it's upgrading, repairing, installing, or the like, you can contact them at squireselectric.com. Please tell me you heard it here on the Emerson News Network. Here is Don Taylor.
A West Texas lake has completely dried up except for a small pool of water, which is so red it looks like blood. The O.C. Fisher Reservoir, just northwest of San Angelo, has been a popular place to swim, boat, fish, and camp for the last 50 years, but not right now. The entire lake bed is visible and so dry that when you walk on it, the ground beneath your feet crunches. Linda Jackson of San Angelo says, "I've been out here when there was water, and now there's nothing. We're definitely going through a drought."
Because there was water, and now there isn't.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
She wanted to see what she'd been hearing about on local and national television for herself, and she said, "There's a lot of fish that we've seen on television that have died, of course, with no water. That's what you can expect."
Okay.
More surprising is that the dry lake is now a small pool of water that's formed near where the water normally is released. The water is stagnant and so dark red it looks like blood. Earl Nottingham with Texas Parks and Wildlife said, "This has been one of the most surprising things so far. It's kind of a shock once you walk up on it, and it kind of hits you in the face. I'm here today to photograph it for my department. We're documenting the drought, and the drought is very strong in this area. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen several types of algae, but not this red algae, if that's what it is."
You remember when it was wet before?
It's dry now. It's the darndest thing. Do you have a camera?
Jennifer Guevara and her sister Jill came out Wednesday morning and said, it's in the Bible that the water is going to turn blood red, so you never know when Jesus is going to come. It is all red.
All right.
Blood, she said. Some preachers point out it's a sign from God signaling the end of days. Others believe it's a temporary effect of the drought and that more rain will end the mystery. Nottingham said, it is sad to see it, but it's nature and it happens. It'll happen again. Rains will come back and it will fill up again.
Now, is this why the... I was going to ask if this is why the Red Sea was red, but I don't even really know if the Red Sea is actually red or if it's a thing we just... if we just call it that.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Okay, never mind.
I know that red tide... is caused by a red algae.
It's the same thing, yeah. It's like some sort of a sea lichen or something that just. All right.
A NASA spacecraft blasted off from Cape Canaveral today, marking the beginning of a 5-year journey the unmanned probe will make to Jupiter. Named Juno after Jupiter's wife in Roman mythology, the craft will orbit the planet upon its arrival, collecting data for scientists on the composition of its atmosphere and providing new views of Jupiter's cloud tops as well as its north and south poles.
Here's a question. Where does the word Canaveral come from? It's a very pretty word.
It is.
But it doesn't sound like, I can't tell what the derivation of that is. It doesn't sound Latin as such. I mean, I guess it maybe does, but and it's not used anywhere else. Like, you don't meet like a Joe Canaveral, you know?
No.
Or Canaveral Levine. You don't. It's just
It does sound. It does sound somewhat Latin, though, because it might have. I don't know. It may. Cana, kind of a dog thing or something.
We really have just become. We've just become exactly what everybody thinks we are just now. Where we're just sort of, you know,
it's not like we're surprising anyone by not knowing anything.
Somebody says, "No, no, no! It's Jesus, Don. It's always Jesus."
It's from the Spanish Cabo Canaveral.
At the really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what that means, though. But it's Spanish.
Anywho.
Anyway, the mission is bound for Jupiter. The mission could help scientists answer long-held questions about the origins of the solar system, since Jupiter's huge mass has led astronomers to believe the planet has retained most of the materials present when the solar system was formed more than 4.5 billion years ago. Here we have the sound of Juno lifting off into space.
Chamber pressure says the plateau is not rolling on the signatures. RD-180 upwards.
That guy should really speak up.
Seriously. You know, there's a rocket blasting off like 10 feet away, Ted. Maybe you could speak up a little bit. Never mind.
To withstand Jupiter's intense radiation, Juno's instruments are protected by a thick titanium casing. The spacecraft will eventually be destroyed from the radiation and disintegrate into the planet, ideally after sending back its data to NASA.
That's exactly how my lifespan is going to unfold, actually, strangely enough.
Cooling a newborn baby who has suffered a lack of oxygen and possible brain damage during birth improves the baby's chances, according to researchers. Neonatal units in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States randomly assigned 110 such infants to be cooled within 6 hours of birth to a whole body state that was 3.5 degrees Celsius below normal, while 111 other such babies were told to just screw off.
Now, these are all...
And they were not cooled down.
Are these random babies, or are they babies that had some... I missed this. Did they have some issue?
They are newborns who have suffered a lack of oxygen and possible brain damage during birth.
Okay.
So they took half of them, and they cooled them down, and the other half, luck of the draw, babies.
Sorry, control group.
The chilling lasted 72 hours. 2 years later, 27 of the cooled newborns had died, compared with 42 of the others. Also, 42 of the cooled babies were living free of any disability at age 2, compared with only 22 of the babies who had not been chilled.
That's one of those things that just sort of weirds you out in retrospect. If you're one of the babies that got lucky, as opposed to the guys on either. It's like that thing at.
Why am I still okay? Well, let me tell you, they put you in a fridge.
Seriously, it's called a coin toss, Junior. So it's it's interesting. What did they? I mean, how did they cool them? Does it say? I wonder if that's stick them in a fridge or whatever, but I mean, do they have...
It doesn't say...
I wonder how you cool their temperature evenly. I mean, they must have some mechanism for that, but they don't submerge them probably like they would with an adult because they're babies and they could drown and so forth. And
probably similar to like the neonatal things that they use to warm them up, except in reverse.
The baby oven?
Yeah, instead of the baby oven, it's the little baby wine cooler.
Okay. Like that thing in the back of the BMW?
Yeah.
Where you just push the button and...
Or the Matrix.
Okay. Or that, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Obstetricians may want to advocate calming exercises, a new study finds. Children born to women reporting the most life stress, feeling burdened by events and conditions, had higher rates of birth defects, disease, and behavioral disorders. Anxiety and depression during pregnancy, by contrast, correlated most strongly with a child's risk of developing early infections or parasitic diseases.
And it couldn't be because those mothers are the most likely to go home after a hard day and put in a bottle of Arbor Mist.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just speculating.
I'm so angry. I'm going to just clean the bathroom with all of these chemical things right now.
This whole bag of crack.
Yes. More than 66,000 pregnant Danish women participated in phone interviews asking 18 questions about their levels of stress. Answers were correlated with data on their children's health throughout the next 6 years.
I want to make a dessert called a pregnant Danish.
Mmm, it would be nice and it would be full of extra goodness
That's
inside.
Right.
Until you, like, open it up and, oh, it's got a dead baby.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know where that came
from. That went strangely literal all of a sudden.
Danish, oh, fetus. A shark can pick up a human heart beating close by, so it's helpful to have a deterrent system handy when swimming in ocean waters where they roam. This summer, 61-year-old distance swimmer Diana Nyad's team plans to use a system called Shark Shield during her attempt to swim the 100-odd miles from Cuba to the Florida Keys. The tech isn't new, but it'll be put to a test like never before. For her attempt in the record, Nyad said in a statement to the press that members of her team will accompany her in kayaks, dragging shark shields under the water. Much has been reported about Nyad's preparations, but some confusion remains about what the shark shield system is. Christine Ambrosino researches electrosensory systems in hammerhead sharks as part of her graduate work at the University of Hawaii. Sharks have small pores that lead down canals to gel-filled sacs called the ampullae of Lorenzini. These sacs are what allows sharks to detect weak bioelectric fields set off by all living tissue. She said they basically act like mini volt readers on a shark's head. This super sensitivity helps sharks detect prey, avoid predators, and navigate in the ocean. The Shark Shield is a non-lethal system containing an antenna with electrodes at the top and the bottom. It works by producing electrical waves underwater that are strong enough to cover a 10 to 16 foot radius. The system comes in different forms, including ones that strap to the ankle, attached to a surfboard, or can be affixed to small vessels like canoes and kayaks. I'm sorry. And basically, it works as a shark deterrent by setting up a strong electrical pulse in the water. So if a shark swims toward it, it's like punching them in the face with a cattle prod.
They're doing that. Okay. They're doing that now with mosquitoes, actually, where there's something to do with sprays that actually are combined with carbon dioxide, because the carbon dioxide actually does it jams their receptors, their olfactory receptors, the way that they smell you and they go, human nearby. And they go there. But carbon dioxide actually, if there's too much of it, it blocks their receptors. And apparently, if there's much of it beyond that, then it actually is a very unpleasant sensation to them. And it's actually, you know, and it's harmless, and, you know, for the most part and whatever. The question I have, though, is would you rather drown in a septic tank or be killed by a shark?
Probably killed by a shark.
Really?
Yeah.
You really don't like poo.
I really, really don't like poo, nor do I like the sensation of drowning. So, you
okay.
know.
All right.
And again, killed by a shark, at least I will have those last few seconds.
This is awesome!
Like, oh my God, I'm being killed by a shark!
How about Shark Week?
Yeah, okay. Rather than going, oh God, now everyone's going to know I died drowning in poo.
Yeah, that's a closed and sealed casket. Is
yeah.
what that is. That's a. In fact, they just do that thing if they have the picture of you on a piano. They yeah. don't even. Your body's not even there.
On the other hand, killed by a shark, forever, everyone who knows you will be going, oh, Don, she was killed by a shark.
Seriously, that would be an awesome way to go out. That would be like, you know, taken away by dragons. Would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. A shark expert, by the way, likens the shark shield system to that of a seatbelt and says, a seatbelt will save you 99% of the time, but there will always be the possibility of that one major accident. The shark is a wild animal, and we can't guarantee the shark shield will protect you 100% of the time.
I think the shield we have is called land. That really yeah. is the thing. That proves almost impossible for sharks to navigate past.
I will probably never be killed by a shark because I do have a don't swim anywhere that I might be killed by a shark policy.
Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, August 5th. 2011. Is that, we have one more? Or we
I have
the
one more
science?
That I wanted to share, also related to the severe drought in Texas. One town in Texas has decided to recycle their sewage water. Terry Telchik, yes, who worked in the city manager's office in Big Spring, Texas, said, When you talk about toilet to water tank, it makes a lot of people nervous and grossed out. Water for the town's 27,000 residents comes through the Colorado River Municipal Water District, which has broken ground on a plant to capture treated wastewater for recycling. Said, we are taking treated wastewater, normally discharged into a creek, and blending it with traditionally supplied potable water. In essence, the system speeds up what would naturally occur with the flow of discharged water through wetlands, with more pristine results. Coupled with exceptionally hot weather, water levels in reservoirs have plummeted there. Lakes are drying up. Last month, the district imposed a 20% cutback in water for its customers. Also in Los Angeles, the LA Department of Water and Power is considering a $700 million project to continue treatment of reclaimed water, which, as we know, is water that comes from your toilet, currently used for irrigation and industrial uses, so it can be injected into wells beneath the Hanson Dam. This would cut reliance on hotly contested water supplies from Northern California and the Colorado River. And NASA has taken the idea of recycling your urine even further. The toilet aboard the U.S. segment of the International Space Station includes a tank that collects and filters urine, the first step in an arduous and well-monitored process to recover water and urine for drinking, cooking, cleaning, and other uses.
See, that wouldn't bother me. See, I have no issue with that. That's a thing that that is one of those things that I think people get weirded out about, just because they because it's put to them in terms that make it seem like it's off-putting. I mean, you're drinking pee now. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's what are you going to do? I mean, if you think about it, every liquid you're going to put in your body today, gone through like 8 or 9 million bladders, you know, in its time on Earth. You just gotta be zen with it. Just, you know,
I'm fine.
Just let it go, baby. Just be here now.
I still do not want to drown in poo.
Well, no, poo. But what if it was just whiz?
Oh, that would burn your eyes and everything, but you're still drowning, you know. It's still not good.
Still pick the shark.
I would still pick the shark.
Okay, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. Coming up here in just a bit, we got your entertainment news. Then next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. It is rickemersonshow.com. By the way, I would be remiss if I did not mention this. Coming up this Sunday on Outlook Portland, that is Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. on Cable Channel 3 and Northwest 32 TV, the Gossip Girl Network. Be sure to catch Outlook Portland this coming Sunday. We're going to be talking to, and by we I mean me, talking to Mr. Paul Guinan and Ms. Anina Bennett, who are the creators of Heartbreakers and Boilerplate, which has been optioned by Paramount and was going to be a film from Mr. J.J. Abrams. So,
and which is awesome.
Which is really fantastic, which is really just one of the best things ever. And it's a great... And I'm not just waxing their car. Really, it is hands down one of the best shows we've had. I mean, it was really just because they're just fantastic. I mean, it was really one of those interviews where I didn't even need to be there. I could have just called, you know, like Charlie, and just so tell me about stuff, and then they go for like, you know, half an hour. It's awesome.
Are you saying this show is actually better than the one with me and Mike Russell?
Well. I don't even see the thing about that show, Dawn, is that's like a jersey that's hanging in the rafters. I've retired that show because it was unfair to put other shows up against you and Mike Russell
for sheer entertainment value.
It was like DJ Kubert entering a turntable Olympics. It just discourages other competitors, and so they had to ask him not to. It really, really, really is quite good. Boilerplate, the book/graphic novel/photo album/etc. Also Heartbreakers, but the show itself is going to be great. So that's this coming Sunday,
and also
6:30 a.m.
Along with being incredibly talented, they are just lovely people.
They really are great.
I met them at Wonder Northwest, and they're really, really terrific people.
They are fantastic. So that is this coming Sunday, and you'll be able to watch it a few days after that at OutlookPortland.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A Texas jury will deliberate the fate of Warren Jeffs today after convicting the polygamous sect leader yesterday of sexual assault. Reporter Mike Watkus says Jeffs could face life in prison.
Jeff's going to prison. Oh, no. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you meant something else. Let's see.
The source very close to this case has told me that they have much greater latitude in the sentencing. Basically, they could open up all the issues, the myriad of wrongdoing that Mr. Jeffs has committed to his own followers. And bear in mind, his victims are the people who worship him.
Watkus said Jeffs stared at jurors during his 30 minutes allowed for closing arguments. And then said four words.
I'm going to be buggered.
He said, I am at peace. He's at peace. Like, he's still the only person that matters here. Never once while I was sitting in that courtroom did I ever hear him refer to the two young girls that he raped, the charges against him. And so, you know, I just think it's another little window on the soul of a totally self-possessed man.
He does. He's like the guy, not this guy, but Warren Jeffs really is just, he is just like the absolute embodiment of creepy. I mean, you know, and it's like all of the various kinds of creepy rolled together. It's like molesty creepy. It's like it's crazy unstable creepy. It's violent creepy.
It's religious nutcase creepy.
Religious nutcase creepy. It's like you know, and it's that peculiar brand of proselytizing arrogance creepy that you get in like a Jim Jones kind of guy. I mean, he's all of the shades of horrible rolled into one human being. So sounds like he's well, in the process of getting his, and will continue to get his now for quite some time. So that's good.
Let's lighten the mood with a little entertainment news.
All right, then. Let's see. Here's your entertainment news for Friday, August 5th, 2011, here at Legion of News.
So the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences has chosen two new people to produce next year's Academy Awards. One of those people is a veteran producer and director of live television events, including the Super Bowl halftime shows and the Emmy Awards and this year's Oscars. His name is Don Mischer. Any idea who the other person is?
Busta Rhymes. Wait a minute. Are these to produce or is this to host?
This is to produce the Academy Awards.
To produce the Academy Awards.
The actual program.
Justin Timberlake.
Brett Ratner.
Really?
Yes.
Why couldn't it be Busta Rhymes?
This will be Ratner's first involvement with the Oscar show.
Really?
And I'm assuming the only way he will ever be involved with the Oscar show. And Mischner's second, he produced and directed the 2011 Academy Awards telecast and was nominated for an Emmy for it. Ratner, of course, has produced and directed
How
both
did this
films
happen?
And television. His credits include X-Men, The Last Stand, Rush Hour, and the pilot of TV's Prison Break.
I don't understand. Please to explain.
I don't
Take as
know.
Much time
they,
as you need.
They. I'm just reading you. This is from the Associated Press.
Okay.
They have hired Brett Ratner to co-produce the Oscar Awards.
I hope this doesn't take time away from his upcoming production of Beverly Hills Cop 4, and I'm not making that up.
No.
Okay.
No. We actually saw a.
Jesus.
Saw a trailer the other day when we went to a screening, and it was for, I can't remember what the movie was, but everybody was looking and going, you know, that actually looks pretty good. And then his name came up on the screen, and everyone was just, oh, Brett.
It wasn't Mother's Day, was it?
It might have been.
All right, because he's one of those guys where it's like, he's one of those guys that people just...
No, it was this film called Tower Heist that's starring Eddie Murphy and Ben Stiller and Casey Affleck. And it actually looked funny and really kind of clever and really good. And everyone, honest to God, all the critics, everyone, we were all sitting there going, Eddie Murphy actually looks funny in this. This looks really good. And seriously, when it came up at the end, it said, directed by Brett Ratner, you actually you heard a number of people that just go,
It's like when you know what it is? It's like when you get home and you realize that you've left you left the beer open all day and it's gone flat or something. Or you just, you know, oh, I can't wait to have this dessert, which has gone rancid in the refrigerator since the last time I checked. I guess I won't be having this thing I was looking forward to. Brett Ratner.
You know, some cold, delicious milk. I'll just take a swig of this. Oh, it's lumpy.
God damn.
Yeah.
The only thing Brett Ratner has ever done well was playing himself on Entourage. That's it. That's the end. That's the only good thing that guy ever did. All right.
Here in the Portland metro area, the casting agency in charge of supplying actors for Leverage has put out a final call for season 4 extras. Extras Only is specifically seeking more clean-cut men ages 20 to 60, because this is Portland, and frankly...
we're up to our eyeballs.
They're all full up on hipsters and dirtbags.
Seriously.
Okay? We need So they're looking for people to play law enforcement officers, security guards, and high-class thugs. They're also looking for real cops, detectives, and SWAT team members. The agency is hiring hundreds of extras, and all types can apply Saturday, August 6th, that would be tomorrow, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Extras Only is at 635 Northwest 16th Avenue in Northwest Portland.
Have fun getting downtown on Saturday to do that, by the way.
Yeah, don't try going across the Hawthorne Bridge.
Bridges to get there. The bridges are totally going to be open. They're going to be they're going to be accessible. They will not be blocked or impeded in any way.
Head on downtown.
Yes. And he says, "Reckon you play an international security guard?" "I need you to stop right there. What is the merchandise under your shirt?"
You can finally use that English accent you learned from watching Cocktail.
No. It's. For that I pull out the Spanish.
Ah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Comedian Jerry Lewis is no longer serving as the Muscular Dystrophy Association's national chairman and won't be appearing on this year's Labor Day telethon. Lewis, 85, has been the MDA's national chairman since the early 1950s and has hosted the Labor Day Muscular Dystrophy Association telethon since 1966. He announced in May that he was retiring as host of the telethon, but Lewis added he planned to make his final appearance on this year's September 4th show and planned on continuing to serve as MDA's national chairman. The statement, however, from MDA Chairman of the Board R. Rodney Howell said Lewis will not be appearing on the telethon. Howell added that Lewis is a world-class humanitarian and we're forever grateful for him for more than half a century of generous services to MDA. The statement did not provide any further explanation as to why he will not be returning. Lewis has in recent years battled a debilitating back condition, heart issues, and a crippling lung disease, pulmonary fibrosis. The live telethon usually lasts 21 and a half hours. And so, let's face it, he's probably just not really up to it at all.
Well, I mean, you know, a long time ago, he quit doing the whole, because it used to be that it ran like a whole day or 21 hours or 25 hours or whatever it was. And then there was this point like in the mid to late 80s where he started taking naps. And that's when I started, I saw the writing on the wall. I mean, once he got off the drugs and he was not able to just sort of sit there and just scream into the camera while sweating and looking like a crazy man.
Yeah, the best time to watch the Labor Day telethon was always like Sunday morning, mid-morning on Sunday, when he'd been awake for like, you know, 20 hours or something, and his hair was all greasy and hanging in his face, and the tie's askew, and he's just staggering around and just rambling about anything.
The best part of the Labor Day telethon was always when he started, it would be toward the end, and he would feel like the tote board wasn't kicking up quite, you know, fast enough, and then he would lose it and just start berating the viewing audience at home. Just, how can you sit there? How do you live with yourself? You're sicking me, all of you.
They wheel out some kid in a wheelchair and he'd be pointing at the kid and yelling at the camera.
Yeah. I mean, it would just, and you were just waiting for the day that he would just drop dead on television right in front of you. I mean, that was sort of the, I mean, you just felt like at any moment, like his eyes were just going to blow out of the front of his head. And he was going to Tommy Cooper himself right there on television.
Okay, I won't read that because it's dumb. A court document says a man charged with smashing glass doors and breaking into the New York City theater where David Letterman tapes his television show told police he'd had at least a dozen beers and several shots and didn't remember much about what happened. James Whittemore pleaded not guilty Thursday to charges including burglary. The 22-year-old is accused of using a metal pole to break several of the Ed Sullivan Theater's glass doors and damaging items inside early on July 10th. A court document filed Thursday says Whittemore told police he had a fuzzy memory of the last of several bars he visited, and then he remembered being on the Manhattan Theater's floor. The document says he calls the incident embarrassing.
Regrettable. That was the other word that, yes, I was there waiting for there. All right, we got 60 seconds here. We got like 1 minute.
Sarah Michelle Gellar is headed for a new series on the CW network, but she says she's going to find time to return to All My Children. She confirmed yesterday she'll make a farewell appearance on the canceled soap opera where she played Kendall Hart from 1993 to 1995 and won a Daytime Emmy Award. All My Children will disappear from ABC on September 23rd, ending its four-decade run. At the Television Critics Association's press tour, she said, "I just wanted to be a part of it." She says she has no idea what part she will play in her one-day guest shot. She also was on hand to discuss her new series, Ringers, in which she plays a woman in trouble who impersonates her twin sister. That's going to be on the CW. So not just the Gossip Girl Network, it will now be the Sarah Michelle Gellar Ringers Network.
That's right. So it's sort of a Blake Lively, Rick Emerson, Sarah Michelle Gellar sandwich that network is.
Although I am still holding a grudge against them for canceling Hellcats.
Sons of bitches.
Damn it.
Let's see. We'll just give it a second here.
And Roseanne Barr said she's running for president. She was on Jay Leno last night, and she said she's going to run for president.
Have you seen that show of hers?
No.
The best thing about it is just that it's called Roseanne's Nuts.
And is it about her running like a nut company?
She runs a macadamia farm.
Okay, yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, I know.
All right, there you go. And with that, we bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for listening today. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology, Magic Provider, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program that is at rickemersonshow.com. That is at rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again Monday. That is Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying weekend, won't you?